Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Yes, the Philadelphia 76ers of late have a lot of highlights.
Sergio with the ball. McConnell's got four fouls. Here's Joel Embiid. He's going to shoot a three from the top, and it's good. He's got five in a row. Joel Embiid from out top for three.
It's amazing what Joel Embiid has meant for the Philadelphia 76ers. Of course, I had the Penn State-Indiana game here last night, and one of the Sixers scouts was here. He had stories about the old regime. We'll leave it at that. All right. I've been really anxious to have this guest. When certain people come on the air and start to speak, you perk up and listen. This has always been one of my guys. That's Tim Kirkjian. Tim, first of all, welcome. It is really great that you carved out some time for us.
My pleasure, Steve. Anytime.
First of all, just so everybody knows, he wrote two really great books. I'm Fascinated by Sacrifice Flies. Is this a great game or what? And I have to throw in America's Game as well. So I want to make sure everybody knows about your great writing as well. So,
well, thanks so much. The last one, I'm Fascinated by Sacrifice Flies, made the New York Times bestseller list. So that makes me really happy.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, the Hall of Fame ballot that came out, revealed last night, three made it. In the end, what kind of traction did Bonds and Clemens get? Because you did vote for both of them. Did they get as much traction as you thought they would?
You know, based on the data we got before the election, I thought before the voting that they were going to get an even bigger bump and might go from the mid-40s into the 60s. And they really only made it to basically the mid-50s. But I think if you're rooting for them, and I'm not rooting for anything here, they have a real chance in the 10 years they're on the writer's ballot to be elected, given that there seems to be a softening among the voters in that Mike Piazza, who had PED suspicions, got in last year. This year, Pudge Rodriguez got in on the first ballot with similar suspicions, and Jeff Bagwell, with also some whispers, he got in this year also. So you have to think, with those three getting in, that bodes well for Clemens and Bonds someday getting in. They still have a long way to go, but they made an awful lot of headway this year, moving up 9 or 10%. That's a pretty big jump.
That is a big jump. You mentioned suspicions. How do you treat suspicions versus fact?
Well, Steve, it's really hard. I frankly don't know what to do with this, and I've been confused ever since these PED guys came on the ballot. But my thinking is, if it's just a suspicion, I'm not gonna consider that. I'm gonna vote you in until I get some concrete proof. And even with some concrete proof, you have to look at that era. And you know, when Bonds and Clemens were playing, it just seems to me that a whole lot of other guys were doing this stuff. And there was this tacit agreement in Major League Baseball that, look, nobody's testing, nobody's checking on this, nobody's going to get caught, it's okay to do this. And therefore, I've voted for Bonds and Clemens every year. I'm also not comfortable being the moral arbiter in all of this either. So I need as many facts as I can get, and yet I still don't know enough about exactly what happened to really make an informed judgment. And without all the facts, I've chosen to vote for Bonds and Clemens as opposed to not voting for them.
Tim Raines, Jeff Bagwell, Pudge Rodriguez, make it. What makes them Hall of Famers to you?
Well, for me, Bagwell is a top five first baseman of all time. I mean, after you get past Gehrig, Pujols, and Jimmy Fox, it's pretty wide open. There are a lot of great candidates there, but Jeff Bagwell's right in there with Eddie Murray and Johnny Mize and Willie McCovey and Frank Thomas and a bunch of other guys, Mark McGuire. But Bagwell's numbers are indisputable, if you ask me. 1,500 runs scored, 1,500 RBIs, 1,400 walks. You know, 12 guys in Major League history have those numbers. And when you look at the advanced metrics, which sometimes I do and sometimes I don't, I mean, Bagwell's ranked the fourth best of all time at first base, according to wins above replacement. So that does it enough for me, not to mention good defensive first baseman, great base runner, and a great teammate. Tim Raines is in a different category, one of the great leadoff guys I've ever seen, and to reach base more times than Roberto Clemente and Tony Gwynn, I mean, that tells you how many times he was on base. And when you look at the early 80s, and I was covering baseball in the late 70s, early 80s, watching Tim Raines play was absolutely breathtaking. I mean, he was one of the great leadoff guys ever, and he was the closest thing we had to Ricky Henderson. And you look at walks, and, I mean, you look at stolen bases, runs scored, and hits, and only three other guys that can match Tim Raines in those three categories in the history of baseball. It's pretty impressive. And as for Pudge Rodriguez, you know, again, a top seven or eight catcher of all time. His durability as a catcher was basically unmatched. His defense was astoundingly good. I mean, he led the league in throwing out opposing base runners, the percentage, nine different times, including 6 years in a row. And you add that to the fact that he had the most RBIs and the most career hits of any player whose primary position was catcher. To me, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and I'm glad he got in.
Yeah, in fact, you're talking about a guy that did a lot of this with half of his schedule in 90 to 100 degree heat consistently. And that's something that's rarely talked about, that he had to do that behind the plate all those nights in Arlington.
Right, and I covered that team down there for many years. I know exactly what you're talking about. But the bottom line is the three guys that got in yesterday were very much deserved. And I feel bad, of course, for Trevor Hoffman to miss by five and Vlad Guerrero to miss by 15. But they'll get in next year, I'm pretty sure about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, who did you feel strongly about that you were a bit surprised didn't make it?
Well, I thought Guerrero, I thought only two guys were going to make it, because I thought Hoffman was going to miss by a few, and he did. I thought Guerrero would just miss by a few, and he did. And I thought Pudge Rodriguez would miss, but he didn't. A couple guys to keep your eye on, though. Mike Mussina made a pretty nice movement forward, and I'm still not sure why he isn't higher on a lot of lists, given pitching his entire career in the steroid era, his entire career in the league, and his entire career in the very, very formidable American League East. And over half his career was pitched in that little ballpark in Baltimore. You take all of that and you combine it with the strikeouts and the high win total, I think he's a certain Hall of Famer, and he just moved over 50%. I think that bodes well for him getting in someday. I think he should still be higher on the list.
I have to ask you about Curt Schilling, because I look at him on the mound, and, you know, whether it was Philadelphia, Arizona, or obviously with the Red Sox, is what's happened with him away from the field, do you think that has played a factor? Not with you, but with other people.
Well, certainly not with me, because I voted for him this year, and
right.
I'm just not going to play in the part about what he's been saying lately. Granted, it makes me uncomfortable and I'm confused by some of the things he says, but I'm not holding it against him about his playing career, which ended basically 10 years ago. But yes, I think some guys actually use that against him. And, you know, here's the problem, Steve. This backup log of players on the ballot, somebody's got to go. You can only keep 10. I would put more guys in than 10 if I could, but I can't. So if you're and you're Schilling and you're kind of a C-list Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer, but you're not an A-list like Willie Mays, let's say, you got to be careful with what you do and say, because someone's gonna, in the end, is going to say, I got to make a hard decision here between, you know, whatever, Mike Messina and Curt Schilling, and Schilling has said some things lately. All right, there's the reason not to vote for him. You can't give the writers anything like that. And he has, and I'm not quite sure why.
Tim, what about Edgar Martinez? He played some third base early in his career, but then primarily a DH, and at some point the David Ortiz name is going to come up. So how do you view a primary designated hitter in today's game?
Well, I'm not going to punish him for being a DH. I'm really not even going to subtract significant points, because all Edgar Martinez and David Ortiz did was take advantage of a rule that was in Major League Baseball when they arrived. It wasn't built for them, and they just took advantage of it. If we didn't have the DH, Edgar Martinez would have stayed at third base, or he would have become a first baseman. Might not have been great defensively, but we got a lot of bad defensive players in the Hall of Fame. And I think when you just look at his numbers, they're so much better than people think. Just look at his average, his on-base percentage, and his slugging percentage. Only six Hall of Fame players can match the numbers that he has in each of those three categories. It's stunning how good he was, and people have lost track of him because he played in Seattle and didn't have much of a postseason because the Mariners never made it, which wasn't
right.
His fault either. But his numbers are very comparable, if not better in some ways, than David Ortiz, other than, of course, the postseason when David Ortiz was one of the great postseason players ever. Edgar Martinez just never had that opportunity.
And I have mentioned that on the show many times. I've been a big Edgar Martinez guy because I'll tell you something I always use as a gauge, that, quote, when they played my team, when they came up, did I sit there and go, oh, geez, here he comes? Well, he was one of those guys. Here he comes. He's going to get a hit.
Yeah, he was a great hitter. And, again, to not do it in the postseason and to be a DH, remember, Frank Thomas is in the Hall of Fame, and the DH helped him get there. Paul Mahler is in the Hall of Fame. The DH helped him get there. But at the same time, I didn't subtract points from those guys, and I certainly wouldn't from Edgar Martinez.
Tim, one final question I'll let you go, and I thank you so much for your time. It's been great for us. That would be the 18 ballot. You're going to have a backlog of guys that didn't make it this time, plus a lot of really great names on there for next year. So have you started to contemplate that?
Oh, yeah. I'm way ahead of you on this because I had three spots on the ballot got cleared, so that gives me perhaps three more guys I could add. And then you look at next year, Chipper Jones has to go in on the first ballot. For me, he's the top five third baseman of all time. He's got the highest OPS of any third baseman ever, and he played and hit the middle of the order on first-place teams for 14 years in a row. That cannot be overstated. I think Omar Vizquel is a Hall of Famer, especially with the defense that he brought. You know, you could make a case he's one of the two greatest defensive shortstops ever with Ozzie Smith, and given the importance of that position, at the moment I would vote for Omar Vizquel. And Jim Thome joins next year, and 600 homers, you know, an on-base percentage as high as his was, 50-homer season, and played on some really good teams. I think all three of those guys have a real shot to get in next year, and they have a real shot to be on my ballot. So, again, this backlog of really good players just keeps getting harder because I wish they'd say you can vote for as many as you want, because that would solve some issues of ballot management.
Yep, I agree with that. Tim, an absolute pleasure. Your time's valuable. We appreciate the time you gave us today. I really enjoyed it.
Well, thanks so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Tim Kirchin joining us. Now, there is one of the greats in this. You know, he's really, again, when he's one of those guys that comes on, when they talk, you perk up. Wait a minute. What does he have to say? It's the kind of guy you want to talk to. Great to have him on the show, Tim Kirchin. We'll come back with more in a moment. Mike Conti, Falcons Radio Network, final half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When you're looking for a new Ford vehicle in Central PA, there's only one dealer with four city blocks. Hawks of New Ford.
It's Sunbury Motors Ford.
SMC is where you want to be with over 90 new F-150s priced from just $24,824. See for yourself why Sunbury Motors has sold over 40,000 trucks. Sunbury Motors Ford has over 70 new Ford SUVs in stock with 2017 Ford Escapes on sale from only $19,880. SMC has 45 new Ford cars with Ford Fiestas starting as low as $13,975. Plus, financing as low as 0% for up to 72 months on select models. You deserve to deal with the best. Sunbury Motors Ford. SMC is the dealer voted best in the Valley Reader's Choice for best car dealership,
best body shop,
and best quick service. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. SMC, satisfying more customers since 1915.
We apologize for the guest list. I know a lot of people were hoping they would hear more guests on the show from IndyCar, but went this route.
I'm trying to shake out of this probation period.
Went this route instead with Tim Kirkjian, Dottie Pepper.
Can you give me another month?
Yeah, I'll give you another month.
Sweet.
You know, if you could get like a guy that's in charge of the wrench for Sage Karam's team on, that'd be great.
That was already taken care of. First door on the left in the sales department. I have to try to find a Rolodex for that one.
Just want to make sure, you know. It's like, so when you're out there and the car comes in, what's your first thought? I don't want to get run over. Coming up in the after show, the suit is going to explain how he's going to pay for Suit Lights College. That should be intriguing.
Hashtag Stop. Heading to Reading.
Hashtag fundraiser.
Go fund me. Look out.
That's one thing. You got to give the suit credit. When he came up with that, the idea for the human fund, I thought that's very clever.
Nice.
Now, does your friend understand who the suit is now?
Yes, we cleared the air and got an LOL in return back from Mark. We appreciate Mark listening.
Oh, good. Thanks, Mark. Great to have you on board. There are several things that... I mentioned college football, 14-week season to play 12 games. So, in other words, play 14 weeks to get two byes. Penn State had that a couple of years ago, and I liked it. I thought it worked. And if you're going to, you know, rest is really important. Recovery. We had our caller earlier. Was it, I want to say it was Don from Mifflinburg?
You are correct.
Don used the perfect word when talking about student athletes, travel, things like that. Recovery has now become essential for an athlete. You have to have the ability to get, why have you, for example, you've heard about steroid, let's take steroid use, for example. Tim Kirkjian and I just talked about, you know, steroid suspicions. Well, what makes steroids so effective? Well, steroids makes it effective. You go out, you have a workout, boom, and your recovery is like that. You're able to go out and work out again because steroids allows the recovery to be quicker in a lot of ways. Well, you know, recovery, rest, some rest, good food, things like that are really important. And so if you have to start the college football season a week ahead, and sad, that's not uncommon to have a weekend in August be a college football weekend. My goodness, Penn State played the Kickoff Classic and Pigskin Classics going back 35 years ago. Penn State played games in August. I mean, when they played Nebraska in the Kickoff Classic in 83, that was an August game, the Pigskin Classic. The first game, you know, first game Jack and I did was a game in August with USC at the Kickoff Classic. So starting it a week sooner, people are ready for it at that point too. And to put two bye weeks in there, that's a proposal that's on the table. I'm all for that. I think it would be a great proposal to get 12 games in a 14-week span. Next part of it is the early signing period. June's off the table, but they're talking about December. I'm all in favor of that. I think, you know, you should be able to play your senior year, and then if you've made up your mind, you're going to go anywhere, sign. I think that that's great as well. And the 10th coach I'm for as well. And I think it's long overdue that college football gets a 10th coach. Just on the pure numbers of players that you have in your team, you should have 10.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I don't get it. Where are the arguments? I thought they were going to argue.
Gentle Ben, gentle Ben's good for one or two.
Okay, good.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Ben? Oh, yeah. Ben, yes. There's no question. You ever see years ago that Monty Python skit where a guy goes in and he buys an argument? And he goes in there and all of a sudden the guy says, "You're just a lousy, stinking, smelly, rotten." Right? He goes, "My goodness, I just want an argument." He says, "Oh, I'm sorry. This is abuse. My apologies." He says, "Argument is two doors down." He says, "I'm very sorry about that." Also, the guy turns it off right away. Like, oh, I feel terrible. Oh, my goodness. Hey, time now for the sports bozo of the day. I can't believe it. It's the National Football League again. Now, I want to make one quick point about the NFL before I get to the bozo part. Now, listen to this. You know what the number one rated show in primetime was last week? Steelers and Chiefs. You want to know what the number two rated show for the week was in primetime? Packers and Cowboys. Number three, Patriots and Texans. The number four rated show for the week, Clemson and Alabama. The number five rated show for the week, the NBC pregame show before Steelers and Chiefs. The number five pregame, number six show of the week was the Fox postgame show following Cowboys and Packers. Okay, the number seven was ESPN's pregame show before Clemson and Alabama. Number eight was Blue Bloods. What does that tell you?
That people love Tom Selleck.
Absolutely. And not only that, but Tom Brady wins the number three time slot, and Bridget Moynihan gets the number eight time slot. Right. Okay. It's a bad joke.
No, but I love it. That's great. I forgot she was on that show.
Yeah, she is on that show. And of course, they had a son, Jack, together.
That show's had a lot of staying. For being on Friday nights, that show has had a lot of staying power and popularity.
It has. Now I get to my sports bozo. The Seattle Seahawks are going to be docked a second-round pick because they did not disclose all season long that Richard Sherman had an MCL injury. All right, here's my problem with that. Which game did Richard Sherman miss? What game did he miss?
The games I watched, it didn't look like he had a hitch in the giddy-up anywhere.
But if you're not missing any games... There's a difference between being hurt and being injured. Well, Richard Sherman obviously was hurt, but he wasn't injured enough to be out of the lineup. Why do you have to disclose that? I mean, I realize they do this for gambling purposes and the whole deal. But I suppose Seattle doesn't put it out there because they want people going after Richard Sherman, thinking he's invincible over there and so forth. But it looked to me like every time they went over there, he made most of the plays. How about that? If a guy's playing every down of every game, which he was, why does he have to be on the injury report? I mean, they did that to the Patriots one year, you know. So you know what Belichick did the next week? He put every player on the injury report. I don't know. That league sure is different. Well, now we know the parameters. If you're not in the injury report, it's a second-round pick, and if the officials fail to check all the footballs before the game, which is their responsibility, you can slough it off on the team and a player and dock them a first-round pick. I just want to make sure we know what the rules are in that league. Okay. Telling you, someday it's going to come out, and I'm telling you, the officials, I would not be shocked, did not do their job that day. So how do we make sure that nobody knows? Okay, let's bring in Mike Conti from the Falcons Radio Network. They've got the Packers' first game on Sunday. Mike, welcome. A lot of people didn't think they'd beat Seattle, even with a banged-up Richard Sherman. What were the factors that allowed them to not only win the game, but win the game convincingly?
You know, honestly, I think given the quality of opponent and the importance of the game, that was, I think, the best Matt Ryan has ever played. And in fact, it was the first time the Pete Carroll defense has given up 300 yards passing, three touchdowns or more, and no interceptions to a quarterback. So that's how well Matt played. But I think the bigger headline, Steve, was how well the Falcons defense played. And I understand that Seattle ended up with 20 points, but that included some garbage time work at the end. I think outside of the opening drive of the game, the Falcons defense really, really controlled that game. And they did a pretty good job of keeping Russell Wilson in the pocket. They did a very good job of not letting Thomas Rawls hurt them. And it just continues that maturation process for this young defense that has just improved by leaps and bounds since Thanksgiving. When they took that loss to Philadelphia right before Thanksgiving, that might have been the turning point for them. And to me, that was the biggest headline of what they did on Saturday. It wasn't how well Matt Ryan played. It was just how well that defense played.
Much does it help Matt Ryan, though, that 1-2 punch in the backfield keeps everybody honest?
Well, I mean, the reason why Matt Ryan has had the season he has had this year is because the Falcons and Kyle Shanahan have been able to stay balanced. And the reason why they can stay balanced is because, you're right, Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman are trustworthy running backs who aren't going to fumble, they aren't going to make mistakes, but then also up front you have Alex Mack and some really, really good tackle play from Ryan Schrader and Jake Matthews. And that has really, really led to some productive things this year for this running game. And it was nice for the Falcons to be in position, Steve, in the second half where they could try to shorten the game when they were up by two or three possessions to just pound the football, basically, and get first downs when they needed it on the ground. And that has certainly taken a lot of pressure off Matt Ryan.
Defensively, one big change between the two teams since the first time they met is Ty Montgomery is now the tailback. What, you know, now look, he's not going to carry the ball 10, 15 times in the game, but that's also a wideout that runs routes playing tailback. Does that present an issue here?
It could. The thing I like about the Falcons linebackers is they're extremely fast. They don't necessarily hit the hardest, but they cover a lot of real estate. You're talking about young guys again. Deion Jones, who's a rookie out of LSU, Devondre Campbell, who's a rookie out of Minnesota, Vic Beasley, who's had a terrific year out of Clemson in his second year. So I think they have the speed to deal with that. To me, the biggest concern about the Packers running game this weekend, and I think Wayne Larrabee will probably be able to tell you more about it tomorrow. You know, Aaron Rodgers, when he faced the Falcons in week 8, he had 60 yards rushing, which was a regular season career high for him. And I think that's what has a lot of people nervous down here, and Richard Smith, the Falcons defensive coordinator, a little bit nervous, is, you know, Aaron Rodgers can do a lot of things outside of a pocket, kind of similar to Russell Wilson. And it's going to be a very, very difficult scheme game for the Falcons coaching staff to deal with that.
How much does he substitute? Because as you saw, of course, with Dallas, Rodgers' ability to do a quick count and then get him to the line and then get a quick snap. What kind of sub-packages do the Falcons use?
Falcons substitute more than any other team in the NFC on defense. And Aaron Rodgers got him in one of those in week 8. So that's one of the very first things Dan Quinn brought up on Monday at his press conference, that they're going to have to be really, really conscious about substituting and not getting busted in one of those situations. And I think that is a huge, huge concern for the Falcons defense because they do rotate so much, especially on the defensive line. And I think one thing it might lead to is less work for Dwight Freeney, because Freeney is a guy that they typically bring in only on third downs and in obvious passing situations to rush. And you might see a real reduction in his workload this weekend because they're so afraid of getting caught with 12 men on the field.
We know the injuries that the Packers have at corner, and they've had to take their safeties, in particular, Ha-Ha Clinton-Dixon, cover up a little bit. Are the Falcons right. salivating over that possibility because of where the Packers are at the corner?
Well, I'm not sure, because Julio Jones has also hurt himself. Now, I don't think he's going to practice at all this week. Now, the team has said he's going to play.
Was he got turf toe?
Well, Julio is permanently going to have a toe injury, Steve. Okay. But a lot of people don't know this. He actually had a play put in his foot when he was in college.
Okay.
And he's just, I think I told you this last week, he's always going to be one of those guys who's going to be 80% at best, because he's always going to be dealing with foot and toe problems. And Julio actually took himself out of the game against Seattle once it became clear that the Falcons were not going to relinquish that lead. And he said it was part of a health maintenance plan. So Julio's not practicing at all this week. He says he's going to play on Sunday, but I'm not sure how much he's going to be able to give them. So you're right. I mean, if you could get Julio on Ha-Ha Clinton-Dix or a corner who's not a true corner, well, you would love that matchup. I just don't think he's going to be able to give them a whole lot. And here again, I mean, Green Bay is going to probably be without Jordy Nelson as far as what I've read, and
right.
Devontae Adams might not practice at all this week. So you're talking about the two best quarterbacks in the NFC going head-to-head, and they are not going to have their receiving corps at full strength, which I think is very interesting.
That is very interesting. You mentioned last week, but I want to bring it up again so people understand this. How important has Kevin Mack been to stabilizing the Falcons' offense?
Alex Mack, the center.
I think I said Kevin Mack. It's Alex Mack, yeah.
Right, and this is his first conference championship game. In fact, last week was his first playoff game ever. But that has been the absolute biggest signing, I think, that Thomas Dimitroff has ever made as general manager of the Falcons. Because the one problem that Matt Ryan had in each of the prior 3 years to this, he did not have clean pockets out of which to work. The center-to-quarterback exchange would be very, very dicey at times, and the Falcons wouldn't even line up in shotgun because of them. I mean, you're talking about a very, very simple play that they had trouble executing, and it really, really hampered the run game, too. We expected when Alex Mack was signed here that he would be a steadying influence on this offensive line, but I don't think we realize just how good he is. There is no liability at all right now with that offensive line. And you know what's interesting? Mike McCarthy even pointed this out. Falcons are the only team in the league where all five offensive linemen have played every snap this year.
Wow.
And Alex Mack is the anchor of that. He's been enormous. And if they go to the Super Bowl and win on Sunday, you know, Matt Ryan's going to be the league MVP. But as far as I'm concerned, Alex Mack is the most important player to this team because of the difference he has made and the help he has given to allow Matt Ryan to put up the numbers that he has.
It's amazing what you can do in rounds in the draft to change your team. And Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff, in the last 2 years, have drafted Vic Beasley. What do you have, 15 and a half sacks? Jalen Collins, corner.
Yep.
Right? Then, this year, they took Keanu Neal. Then linebackers Deion Jones, Devondre Campbell, and then they were able to find a kid named Brian Poole. What is all, you know, what kind of job have they done in identifying talent and then giving them a chance to mature?
Well, Brian Poole, Steve, is such a good example because he was an undrafted rookie out of Florida who actually played for Dan Quinn when he was the defensive coordinator down there. The Falcons' starting right tackle on offense is Ryan Schrader, another undrafted rookie out of Valdosta State. Pro Football Focus rated him the number one right tackle in the game again this year.
Right.
Do you know how hard it is to find these undrafted? When you're signing undrafted kids out of college, you're just trying to get bodies for training camp, basically. And the Falcons have found two players who have been very, very key contributors in that undrafted rookie pool, which really speaks to a great job by Dimitroff and Scott Pioli, who's in the front office here, and the scouting staff. But I will tell you, Steve, that Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, put a lot of pressure on Thomas Dimitroff this offseason because Dimitroff's record in drafting, especially in the first couple rounds, outside of the obvious pick of Julio Jones, was very, very checkered. And a lot of his first and second round picks are no longer in the league. And Arthur Blank came out in the offseason and said that he demanded four starting caliber players out of this past draft. And they totally hit. I mean, either Keanu Neal or Deion Jones, who were in that draft, one of them is going to be Defensive Rookie of the Year in the NFL. They're the top two rookie tacklers in the league. And then you mentioned Devondre Campbell. Austin Hooper is another one. They're starting tight end out of Stanford. They found him in this draft. So they really did a terrific job. But to me, when you have a front office really clicking, they are finding some real diamonds in the rough in that undrafted rookie pool, and they have done a tremendous job of that.
Because the base for them, if I'm watching the Falcons, to me, when I look at their base coverage, it looks like it's usually as a foundation of cover three. That correct?
Totally correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. In cover three, early in the year, these kids were getting burned, yet they stayed patient with it. How important was it to stay patient so that the speed of what they want to do and keeping the ball in, because cover three, you want them to throw deep, but underneath you get crushed. So what allowed them to stay patient with that?
Trust in their technique. And I'm not taking credit for that. That's Dave Archer, who's our color guy on the broadcast. Dave played for the Philadelphia Eagles and the Atlanta Falcons, had a long career in the Canadian Football League as well. He said the thing that impressed him the most about Neal, and Jalen Collins is a very good example, because he's virtually a rookie in terms of experience, even though it is his second year, but he played so infrequently last year. He said very early in the season, these guys are in the right place.
Yeah.
They're just making small errors that indicate they aren't trusting their technique. And something got to them in the middle of this season. I don't know what exactly it is or when exactly it happened, but they started trusting their technique. Robert Alford's another very good example, who's, I think, in his third or fourth year now as one of the starting corners on this team. You know, he had the unfortunate distinction of leading the league in pass interference penalties last. Yeah. And now suddenly with Desmond Trufant out, he's become the shutdown corner. Why? He's trusting his technique now. He's always been in the right place, but now he knows to play the ball, not the man. And a lot of credit certainly goes to Dan Quinn, because he's been very, very patient with all of these young players, as he has to be, because these are the players he picked to be in his system.
Finally, Mike, and again, we thank you for your time. The Falcons close down the Georgia Dome in the proper way if they
don't commit a turnover. If Matt Ryan plays a mistake-free game, I think they're winning, Steve. I think just in terms of weapons available and Green Bay injuries and where these two defenses are right now. You know, Green Bay, since Thanksgiving, 30th in the league in total defense, but 7th in scoring defense. Why is that? They are plus 17 in turnovers over the last 8 weeks.
That's right.
So if the Falcons don't commit a turnover, I think they win this game and win it pretty easily.
Mike, thanks so much. Sounds like it's going to be a fun time down there on Sunday. We appreciate your time as always. Great work.
Steve, I can't wait. Hopefully I'll talk to you again in a few weeks about the Super Bowl.
That would be a lot of fun. Thanks, Mike.
You bet.
Mike Conti, Falcons Radio Network. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Great to have you with us on the show today. We had a lot of fun. Our thanks to Dottie Pepper joining us today to talk golf from CBS Sports. Tim Kirkchin from ESPN on the Baseball Hall of Fame. Mike Conti from the Falcons Radio Network. Tomorrow's show includes Jeff Byers, play-by-play voice of Penn State Wrestling, to talk Penn State-Iowa Wrestling, which is tomorrow night at Carver-Hawkeye. We'll also have on the show tomorrow Eli Gold, the play-by-play voice of Alabama. And Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh sports reporter, my brother on the show. We will do tomorrow's show from West Lafayette, Indiana. Why? Because we love exotic locations with beaches. That doesn't qualify on any of them. Although they have a shoreline. They have the Wabash River. But they've decided to leave at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So since they've decided to leave at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we're going to do the show on the road tomorrow. And then Saturday we'll have our game, and then the Chief will have the Shikellamy basketball game as well. Chief joined by anybody in those broadcasts? He's kind of like the dominant figure. Here in your home for the suit, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Have you noticed America loves the suit?
Sure does. Yeah. No suit tonight, though. We got Shikellamy wrestling after your coach's show.
Ah, that's a ratings bonanza.
Yes.
All right.
Roll out the Resolite tonight.
Love it.
Yep, got Braves wrestling tonight. Little warm-up for Penn State wrestling tomorrow night on TV on BTN. So
tomorrow we'll have Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Reporter. We'll talk about the Steelers-Patriots. Eli Gold, play-by-play voice of Alabama. Jeff Byers, play-by-play voice of Penn State Wrestling on Penn State Iowa Wrestling. And last but never least, my brother. I can tell you right now, I'm not only picking the Steelers to win, I'm picking them to win by 10. I think they're just that much better right now than New England. You're stunned.
No way. But I'm one game behind your brother. Got to make another move tomorrow.
This isn't a fantasy league.
Your home for the NFL playoffs and Super Bowl 51. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.